We could give it a shot. I'm willing to give it a shot, but the
Because we're
problem
teaching it to people that don't know about
is,
gaming.
what we're hanging on to in the
At
game
least the
process,
idea I had with going back to games people
even though it
play
kicks us in the ass when we
with
do
these
it.
games is like they want to hold on to their reality.
Games, fascist play.
Games, fascist play.
Media games.
War games.
Capitalism games.
You add them all together, you have essentially a game, which in this case might be called Kick Me.
Mass shooter.
Immigration. Influencer.
Iceman.
Status update.
Happy to help.
Ultimatum.
Ain't it awful.
Climate change.
Gender identity.
Stay up.
Enlightenment.
See how hard I'm trying.
Hi, you've reached Andrew Archer at Minnesota Mental Health Services. Please leave your name and phone number, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
This is Count the Stars in the Sky, Jr. Calling. I'm from Mars, and just wanted to touch base with someone else from Mars. And I understand that you landed here, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Anyway, please do give me a call. And again, this is Count the Stars in the Sky, Jr. Take care.
Andrew calls a fellow Martian and tries to convince him to do the Series 4 podcast. The discussion includes the stay-at-home day movement, subversion, Zen, fascism, and the game's fascist play.
Any life forms there? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, old family and community and what have you. It was great. But I went back, because, as you know, I have a meat factory here on the planet, here on planet Earth. And so I was just trying to just create some business. Anyway,
well, and the rodent meat that you procure is a delicacy on Mars, correct?
Oh, yeah. They don't know it. There's nothing like that there. So it worked out pretty good. But anyway, hold on. Okay. So anyway, that was it. That's nothing beyond that. What about you?
I just did a 2-hour workshop at a conference in St. Cloud yesterday. Okay. And so I got the ponytail going.
Yeah, I noticed
you
that.
You can see cut. Yeah. I got it cut tight.
Yeah,
it's more of a subversive look,
Really?
and I wore this, my struggle used to be I would get too hot while I was presenting. Okay. So then great suffering. You try and think of what you're going to wear, but the public speaking doesn't make me hot or cold.
Oh,
and so what I did was I wore this vest on top of my shirt, even though on the surface, it would create more heat.
Right,
which
right.
is counterintuitive, but I had to wear this because see that.
Oh, I see. Okay,
I had to project that.
Yeah,
as part of my process. This was the craving, what the virtual world is doing to us. Blah blah blah. That was this lecture that I've done, repeatedly, and so a person saw me or saw the video of me in Minneapolis last year doing it. Mm-hmm. So they reached out and said, will you come to this conference and paid me $500 to do something I would have done for free. It's a hike. It's like 2 hours to get there, but
it's worth it though. But how long was the talk?
2 hours.
2 hours. Yeah. $2.50 an hour, not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Yeah, for something that you don't have to prepare for, see?
No.
Yeah, I tell you the story about somebody calling me up from the Library Association. This is back in the day.
Well, you said $500 or something, right?
Well, I thought they would just, it was for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought they were going to, say, no, we can't do that. Oh, sure. I said, okay.
Yeah.
So I just showed up. I didn't prepare. I just showed in. So, because basically what you do, I don't know how you do yours, but what I would do is go in, I'd talk for 15 or 20 minutes, and then say, okay, what's happening? You know, what are you folks thinking?
Yeah.
So the rest of the time is, you know, facilitating a dialogic kind of process. And, you know, that's easy money. Although it's interesting to do, as you know. So the theme again for this talk? Tell me more about that. What were you?
Well, see, back when I was a Zen Buddhist.
Oh, back in the day, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
I understood, you know, craving was the central issue.
Okay.
And so it's called craving. It was that manuscript that I got almost all the way through with NASW.
Right.
So it's taken that thesis that it's a symbiotic process with the virtual world. So it's passive behavior. And I keep digging into that model. Like I showed you that, or I told you about that monogram, that the psychiatrist wrote that was on symbiotic structural, whatever he calls it. The same guy that wrote The Recovery of the True Self that I think I mentioned. So like every time I do one of these, I keep adding information about symbiosis to it. And it just lines up completely with what's happening in the virtual world. But it's between a mother and an infant is the model for it. So that was the crux of the talk, was explaining symbiosis and explaining passivity. And it's a room full of mothers. Almost all of them are moms.
Oh, great.
There were licensed childcare workers. Most of them were county workers. I think all of them might have been working for the county. But it was literally, by all ostensible purposes, you know, presentations, all women. And then I walked in, just like, you know, 50 or 60 women. I was like, glad I put the ponytail up. This
yeah, yeah. yeah, that was,
you know,
a nice...
So I take your cue from when we did the Zen retreat. I just hit the prayer bowl. So I don't need to think about anything other than what kind of meditation I'm going to facilitate. So I just started off with the meditation as a way to see if people will talk. And in this crowd, and it didn't help, it was 12:15 to 2:15. It's like the worst time to, you know, right after lunch. They're all full of caffeine and sugar, and you know, some of them are falling asleep and drooling. But I don't care. And so what I do, when I have the wireless mic, I just walk around.
Oh, okay.
I just walk and just talk. And I tell them, I was like, you know, I'd like to hear what you have to say in dialogue, but I can talk all day about this stuff. So I just ranted and raved and laughing. But the best part was the talk is about what the virtual world is doing to us, but what we can do about it. And so I showed them, well, I explained the stay at home day concept and all the iterations of it and the whole story. And I at least in front of an audience, I'd never went from A to Z with the whole process. And so I must've talked about this for like 15. I looked at the clock and I was like, oh man, I got all this. Cause it was one of the last slides. I was like, great, I got all this extra time. I'll talk about Lenny. I'll talk about the principal and the school board. And so I said, listen, this is a template. Like all you literally have to do is take some energy and subvert it into a closed system.
Right.
The school is a closed, in my view, the public school, at least the district I'm in, it's a closed system. So if you try and introduce new energy, collective organizing, but actual material like the magnets I had made, it totally throws off the system.
Well, of course it does.
Because they try and stop it. So I said,
most systems do that, sure.
Yeah, you could even use my website if you want, but all you have to do is start asking dumb questions, you know, related to like tech, like what kind of relationship do they have with these corporations? Where is the data going? And, you know, and so I explained the whole process because I think it's turned into a kind of template for a social movement that's very easy. I told them it's scary. It doesn't feel good. But if you get through the fear, there's joy. I mean, there's a ton of joy in this, you know, story of what Lenny and I are doing. But I was scared much of the time. I just decided I didn't care that I was scared. I'm just going to do it anyways.
Sure. Yeah, you do it anyway. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. All right. Sounds like that's happening. I mean, you know, the whole theme is is developed into something very, very concrete, then you got a movement going. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, for now. I mean, I don't have time to keep doing the stuff I've been doing with it, but mm-hmm. I figure next year, same time, same kind of thing, or you find another issue to attack and then use that, use the stay at home day. Cause through this, like kind of talking with people and research, like there's certain days mm-hmm. where the school gets funding based on attendance or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like you could target, I think it's like the 100th day of school or something.
Right.
So you could hit them, you know, in the pocketbook, which they wouldn't like. But then, you know, I step back from all this. I'm like, God, I think this is just a kick me game. You know, oh. I'm getting kicks left and right. I mean, I don't care. I don't go, oh, this always happens to me. Right. But it's still like, it's provocational.
Yes. Like how? Say more about that.
Well, when Lenny brings the magnets into the school, I know that the principal's going to call me.
Right.
And so, and then when the principal calls me into the office, I mean, I said that we're undermining her authority. That was the whole point. But she said, you can't do this.
You literally said that?
Yeah, because it's subversion. I'm teaching subversion.
I see.
That's what I teach my clients, too. They got to undermine their cultural conditioning.
I see.
Throw it away, burn it. But you can't follow all that programming. Most of it's so archaic.
Right, sure.
You know? And so that's where all of this Zen, TA, social movement, blah, 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 all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Subversion. And it takes courage to do it, but I mm-hmm. think it's a meaningful way to deal with despair.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is like, you know, because I've come full with the mass shooting stuff, all these conversations with administrators, the superintendent, just random parents, there ain't nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Taking away the guns, I don't think would actually, or like banning assault rifles, I don't know that would make a big difference. But what's going to happen, pessimistic view, is they're going to militarize the school. More guards, bulletproof glass, you know, vestibule.
Yeah, like they haven't I can see that response. I see that coming.
And I mentioned in that school board meeting, fusion centers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to treat the war on terror, the war on mass shooters. It's all surveillance, mass supervision, you know, mm-hmm. the militarization of all aspects of society, whatever problem. You know, we see the solution in terms of, you know, arming up, you know, mm-hmm. guns, you know, but you turn the school into a bunker, then the kids are really sitting ducks. You know, how do they escape if it's a prison?
Well, it's a lot of problems with that.
It should be open.
Sure. It's a lot of problems.
They should be redesigned. They're designed like prisons.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. If somebody actually gets in there, and somebody will.
Yeah.
You know, then it's bad news, right? And plus, you know, you're creating a culture there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a culture of containment.
Exactly.
Yeah, versus freedom and flow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's like, now, you know, there used to be an old thing that I talked about years ago about order implicit in disorder, where you basically create wide parameters. Wide parameters.
Yeah.
So the people within that parameter, within that structure, those of us in the structure, have an experience of some freedom. If you go far enough in any direction, you'll hit the wall.
Yeah.
Bang. Right?
Yeah.
But it's not a secret that the wall's there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you have more space to roam.
Yeah.
More space to, yeah. So that's, you know, we used to talk about that a lot in psychiatric care. How to help these kids to manage parameters that are not as tight as a lot of the hospitalization processes are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How do you create that feeling of some freedom, some flow, and
right.
some ability to make choices.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that. In the end, you know, you have to step in and say, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's true for schools.
Yeah, right.
At some level, that's true for schools, right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah, and then you know you tie it all the way through because it's the school's a closed system.
Right.
The script
right.
is a closed system. Ego is a closed right. system. So in all right. of these, you know, culture is a relatively closed system. And all of this, the way I think one practical way to see that is subversion. And I told, you know, the audience yesterday, I'm not talking about Molotov cocktails or burning buildings, subversion. I'm just saying you see something that doesn't seem right. You undermine it. You look what kind of response you get. And all I got was defensive reactions. Like, you're scaring people. I'm like the guy with the sign that says love on it, standing on the corner is scaring people. It's like, no, the people carrying AR-15s everywhere are scaring
people. Yeah, that's what's scaring
people. I'm not scaring people. Like,
right, yeah.
But it's very kind of paranoid, defensive.
Really?
So look how hard we're trying. Like, right. please.
Yeah. So is that really the kind of response you're getting?
Those are real responses. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so it scares the shit out of them that they should question the system or undermine it in any particular kind of way.
Yeah.
That because, you know, fear, loss of structure equals increased fear.
Yeah.
Okay, so once you start tampering with the culture, people get freaked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So you have to name that too. I think you do. Maybe you do. But yeah, you have to name that too. Okay, so... You know, what do? We create culture to sustain ourselves. Part of that is to feel safe in some that we are something important some way or another, blah, blah, blah. And that our system is designed to take care of us. I mean, you can see the big racial trip that's going on in the country again. That issue, right? It's that issue. Oh, my God. You know, all these brown and black people coming from everywhere, including Mars. And they...
Yeah.
And we're gonna lose everything.
Build a wall.
Yeah, build a wall.
Keep building the wall. Everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And get guns. Let's get more guns. Anyway.
Yeah.
We get freaked out about that. And I see what you're doing though. It's important. Mm-hmm. To say yeah, and you have to be able to challenge the structure.
Yeah. And I think that entails what I think I did, maybe not aware of it at the time. Is actually not turning toward fear is kind of what, you know, Flint would prescribe, or I think you would prescribe in the past,
but
is actually, you know, running right at it in a sense is like, you know, speaking in public, you know, I get some activation or whatever, but that's not like, that's nothing, you know, that's old hat kind of thing, but going in, you know, meeting with the top administrators about, well, I emailed you about this. So I have this meeting with like the three kind of head honchos, if you will, about safety, and they do the whole threat assessment stuff and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm like sweating it kind of beforehand, you know, in a little bit different way. And so I walk into Lindsay's office and I said, gosh, I'm feeling really scared about this meeting. Not, I typically wouldn't do that. I'd just be like, oh, you know, I'll be fine. Work through
it. I'll get through it. Yeah.
But I was really scared. And so I just said, I'm scared. And, you know, the Buddha that she is, she says, well, you know, they're more afraid of you than you are of them. And then I was like, the bottom of the bucket drops out. You know, it's like,
That is
of course
true.
They are.
Of course they are. They're freaked out. But that's all the reason why you ought to be afraid too. You see?
Well, right.
But you, because they're gonna act, you know, the potential for acting crazy because they're scared.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty high, you know, or it feels like it anyway.
Well, and it's Minnesota nice around here. So what they said was, you know, we don't want to be scaring people. And I said, hold on.
Yeah, hold on.
I'm a therapist. Okay, I know that I can't make people scared. There's things that you can do. That people, you know, trigger themselves and whatever. But I intentionally crossed the transaction when he said that. Again, another undermining of authority. Somebody says you can't do it, and you say, well, actually I can do that.
Right.
You know, it's like he's not gonna, you know, sort of one up me in that situation because he's got his two other guys there. You know, it's me and these three Cops is what they look like. Everybody looks like a cop to me, but these guys especially. And so, but I just listened to them and I said, you know, well, one question, because they said, you know, we want to address your safety concerns, is how they invited me in. It's like, I didn't say I had any safety concerns, but okay.
They made that assumption, right?
It's probably, they're only trying to help me, right? With my...
Yeah, they're only trying to help me.
So I said, well, you know, I'm a little confused because I read that having school resource officers, which is euphemism for having an army man outside the school. It's just a police officer, resource officer. Like it's bullshit. Right. I said, well, you know, I read that that actually increases the likelihood of mass shootings. Why is it that you have the school resource officers at the two high schools if it increases? Right. And the top guy goes, oh, yeah, you know, I think it's just a slight increase. And in my world, it's either up or down, right? It's not, a slight or...
Yeah. That's interesting.
And so then I look back at the book that I read it from. It actually makes the school more of a target because these are all suicide missions.
Right,
they want people with guns there. And you get three times the amount of deaths and injuries if there's a school resource.
Because it ends up to be a shootout, yeah. Right, yeah.
So it's not interesting. A slight.
But
so
look at it. Yeah, look at his technique, though. I think the technique was really incredible.
Discount.
Yeah, discount. Right. And in a very, it's actually not quite that, you know, that's not the point.
Right. Right.
Right. Very, very slick. Very slick.
And then that's I sent that actual text information to the superintendent after he and I met. He must have lost the email. I didn't hear back from him.
Oh, that's probably what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But the other thing they told me in the meeting is, you know, next year they're going to put vestibules in the openings of like 7 or 8 of the schools, which, you know, vestibules, when you go into prison, you open the door and it locks behind you and the other one's locked.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, that's basically.
I didn't know they call it a vestibule.
Yeah, I didn't know either. But they, you know, you got somebody in a window there that assumes you're a threat, you know, is basically how I see it is like. But the Nashville shooter just shot through the glass. I mean, it's not like they can't get in.
Yeah.
But that's creating a culture of suspicion, threat.
Well, it's also creating a culture or reinforcing a culture of we are doing what it is we need to do to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's like, well, that's far less than what you need to be doing to take care of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You, it's like, you see, but we're on record as, I mean, it reminds me of back in the day of, you know, when I was doing a lot of work in the, you know, cultural competence stuff, you know, almost every organization, and I did a lot of organizations, trainings and all that kind of stuff. And what would happen always is that it would, and we talked about this way back, but even the school social work was like this. Well, you get to a point where it's like, wait a minute. Oh, shit. So, I mean, at first it's like, let's embrace this idea. The reason is that it looks good. It provides face work, right?
PR.
And so, yeah, PR. And it looks good. It looks like you have some commitment to protect, in this case, to protecting students at the school and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other organization, we have some real commitment, by golly, to eliminating social injustice and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And so we embrace cultural competence until we discover that it requires a significant change in cultural in the culture itself. And in other words, it undermines hierarchy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It undermines that whole hierarchical process that's in place. There are people maintain power. How do they maintain power? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that if we actually embrace this, we have to give that up?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You have to give that up, especially in the way in which you use it and promote it and actually who it takes care of and so on and so forth. So,
Yeah.
It's just, you're going to run into that all, as you know,
Right.
especially with this kind of thing that you're promoting. They're going to be free. Shit. You
Well,
know,
it's
they're,
like when I
oh, we just want to have, come on in and have, let's have a talk because we sure like to hear what you have to say
Yeah.
and by golly, and do what we can do to be helpful. Right? Then you
They're
get
happy
in
to
there and
help.
it's,
They're happy to help.
happy to help. And then, it's like, oh shit.
Well,
So that's the
it
game.
reminds me of when I was talking to the daycare owner about democratizing the workplace, because I was reading that book, No Bosses, I think. I might have told you about it. I didn't even finish it. It was a tough read, but I mean, the point is sort of obvious. Is like you have democracy, everybody gets a vote, you plan and decide together. And so at the end of the conversation, the owner said, "Well, I have to have some authority." I was like, "Yeah, yep, that's right. That's
Do
exactly
you?
the problem." Right?
Yeah.
The
Do you?
hierarchy that you're
Why?
speaking to.
Yes. There it is. There it is. Well, why do you have to have some authority?
Yeah.
Hmm.
She's the
How come?
boss. She wants to be
Yeah.
the
Oh, it's the
boss.
boss. Oh, I get it. How come we can't have people have voice in the organization, and you make a choice based on some kind of process that's collective? Okay. Versus it's
Control.
left. It control is left to me. Well,
Versus when Lindsay came on here, it's like the more I can give away to her, like if she
the
wants to take
better.
over and do the whole thing, even better. You
Yeah, it's
know,
even
I'll
better.
just sit in my office and see clients and read and do whatever. If she wants to be if she wants to be the boss, owner, I don't need to be in charge. I don't need credit for it. So,
Yeah, that's what happened with the dog one we ran. Catherine, basically, because Catherine's another Buddha,
yeah.
but she basically comes in, takes over the whole thing, and administrates the whole thing and does this and that and the other. And right, all I did was teach Tai Chi and show up drooling and shit. I had my say in certain things, but so did a lot of other people. Right. So anyway, that yeah, I it's like that idea of I'm not attached to the outcome. I mean, I like what you said about, how you manage in fear. It isn't so much, in my opinion, simply turning towards the fear. As I understood you, it's like you just go and do what you're going to do. The fear will manifest and you remain grounded. And centered and
It's really
so
just more energy. It's not
it
even
is more energy.
anything bad.
It's not even
It's
bad.
not
You
like you're gonna forget to say
right.
something. You're
Right.
gonna be
Right.
sort of, I guess, triggered or hooked a little bit into that child. It's the child ego state that's
Right, sure. But you're aware
experiencing
of that.
fear, but it's like, who cares?
Well,
But so
part of
many of
it,
my clients, they like, especially when I invite them to do the group, they don't even know what they don't even know regarding the group, and they're like, "I'm not ready." It's like, no, you're scared. It's not
You're
that you're not
scared, that's what
ready. You've
it
never done it. Of
is.
course you're not ready. You're scared. And they're like, and I go back and forth, is this, and we talked about it, is this a mandated thing? Is this just part of the program? And you either do it or you don't. And it's kind of a koan. It's not really solvable. But it's just clear the ones that do the group are the ones that are willing to deal with fear. And then they get well. Ones that don't, they want to be analyzed and, kind of pretend like they're doing therapy or whatever. And I mean, I'm okay with that too, but am I going to make it a kind of standardized thing? Probably eventually when I have more clients and I can get by with firing more people or whatever. Or letting go of people a little bit easier or something, or so I just keep playing around with it. I keep changing the model a little bit with the group. But I love it. I love doing it. So
Yeah, you like group work.
yeah.
You enjoy that, yeah. What is it about it you enjoy?
Well, I like being less or more of a attendant. I like to attend more. An individual, you're kind of forced into responding constantly. You know, it's a one-on-one. Versus the group, I can just sit back and relax and, you know, I can see what's going on. And then I'm basically deciding, okay, is this something I want to intervene, or do I let the group figure it out eventually, you know, and go back and forth? But it's always different. I mean, obviously everything is always different, but depends on the composition of the group, the number of people. So it's improvisational is probably the word to describe it. I like that. That you're kind of on your toes a little bit just by the nature of the process. I mean, I've really haven't done much of it. It's only the last couple of years, a little bit back in the day, but nothing really. So I like the newness of it. You know, I have to really try and figure out what I'm doing in there versus individuals. Like, yeah. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I like that too, with doing groups.
And are you getting back in the saddle or what?
Well, I don't know.
You talked to Daryl.
Daryl and I talked about it, and it's sort of sitting out there. You know, we'll see. You know.
Yeah.
But if I go back to it, I do psychotherapy in the traditional sense of the word. You know. So I'm thinking maybe I'll go and I'll do some I Ching readings for people. Maybe we'll add a little Qigong practice in there somehow or another. I may do groups like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just need to do something that's more creative right now. You know, I can go back to doing the same thing that I used to do and it would be fine. I know how to do it. And
I
enjoyed doing it when I was doing it. It wasn't like it was a burden of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally I would throw the coins, do the I Ching reading for somebody, and you know, they would, you know, it'd be kind of come up more or less spontaneously, usually not planned. Somebody would be struggling with something and I'd go, oh, wait a minute, you know, because we seem not to be sort of getting at the root of it.
Yeah.
So I'd say, you know, hey, here's something that I sometimes do, and I explain it and they go, okay, let's give it a shot. Throw the coins. Excuse me. Then we'd do it that way. So anyway, so yeah, I may do that this summer. We'll see. May start back. Catherine said the other day, just out of the clear blue sky, why are you going back to Daryl? I mean, she loves Daryl. Daryl, you know, we're all good friends. And I said, well, what do you mean? Why? She said, well, you know, there's an office that you can rent up on the third floor of the building there for $350 a month.
To steal. You know?
And I went, what? Really? $350? So I'd have to jump at it right now, but my guess is there'd be opportunities like that later on if I decide to do it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, part of it is health issues and that. I'm feeling much better.
Oh, good.
I'm not completely where I want to get to, but I'm getting some real good herbal treatments and acupuncture from this young guy here at Madison Acupuncture, Community Acupuncture, which is his program. Mm-hmm. This guy's probably 35 years old, somewhere in there. And he's good at what he does.
Uh-huh.
So I'm taking a bunch of stuff for viruses and different stuff. And he's giving me some herbal meds to cure cancer.
Really?
You know, it's like, really? You go in the Western medical world, and the only way to do that is radiation or chemo, basically, with hormone support.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, they may teach you a little bit about diet and all that, but the diet's not designed to cure you. It's designed to slow the spread.
Yeah, it's all palliative, you know, symptom reduction. Yeah,
symptom reduction.
You know, Reich thought is self-energy. I mean, I don't think he said it that way. He called it orgone.
Right.
But he had people sitting in those little boxes.
Right.
So what's actually happening in there is just self-energy.
Self-energy. Yeah.
And I imagine reabsorbed in the cell. You know, I think I was emailing you this Phillips guy that had the monogram. In the recovery of the true self. I thought you would like that title because the subtitle was the human animal in and out of therapy. That's totally correct. Because you're constantly, he uses a spiral model rather than a progressive or heroic kind of model.
Right.
Stages, development, but he'd say, no, it's always you're going like back and forth, you know.
Right.
But he uses the cell, you know, with the nucleus as the diagram for the, I guess, the psychic structure, if you will, as self, capital S is the nucleus. And then the membrane is the ego, which is object relating. You're Don, I'm Andrew, you know, all the cultural conditioning is ego. And I thought that worked really well because it's, you know, with the PAC model, you know, the person, the parent is identifying, oh, you're Don, you got big headphones on, I don't, you know, kind of, but he just simplified it as a cell because then it's just, it isn't separate from everything else. It's made up of cells.
Right.
And it's the same thing. I thought that was really clever.
That is clever.
That he used it that way. And of course, the ego is closed. Self energy is open. You know, so ego
give is stripped. Give me this guy's name again. I think you may have sent it to
Phillips. What's his first name? Oh, I got it right here. Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking of you when I looked at this quote. R.D. Phillips, maybe Richard. Recovery of the True Self. There's this quote about psychotherapy. I think it's Robert Phillips.
Okay.
Check this out.
Actually, yeah, I think I remember that now. I remember because I remember.
He's a psychiatrist, but he was like a legit therapist, it sounds like. Yeah. Check out this quote. Dominant cathexis was italicized.
Right. I noticed that, yeah. I know this is very powerful. Dominant cathesis. It's a similar response to encouragement to give and introduction of information. How long ago was this guy writing?
And this is from 1975.
Wow. Okay.
And then the book is from 95.
Okay.
That's and, deep. You know, a lot of the book was, you know, I could, you know, he kind of goes on and on, but some of the stuff really, really stuck. And he obviously has a big view of Western culture. He has influences from indigenous communities. Native American, I think, is what the language he uses for it. So, you know, right off the bat, you got a glossary and the definition for autonomy. He says is, you know, we're all interdependent. But he says autonomy is about a balancing independence and dependence. That was really, really accurate. Well, you know, can't do it all yourself.
That's the still point above opposites, yeah. How do you manage that?
Yeah. And he's got case examples in there, which are really kind of fun to read to understand his process a little bit. So I'm probably overselling the book. Again, it wasn't like I was rushing to read it. But there's it's like either really good or really bad, I think, would be the way to say it. But I like the model he uses. It's like, because he brings the cellular model, because he basically takes the, you know, Burns idea of the psychic organs, the archaeopsyche, the, you know, neopsyche, et cetera, and the PAC. And he just says, no, this is just ego. And then it's self. The true self or whatever self energy. And that just works because it has that biological aspect. And he's so in his monogram on symbiosis, it's like very biologically driven. And that's where I kind of used it in that talk yesterday. It's like when we're on the machine, you know, or when we're scrolling through our phone, it's like, we're like relaxed with the receiving system, like a baby nursing, you know, they like fall asleep. Sucking on the nipple. That's the receiving system. But then then we get into the world and everybody's like anxious and running around and they get on their phone and they relax.
Right.
You know, so it's like, it's just providing us like the actual, you know, muscular skeletal, I think actually relaxes. So that's my experience and observation of like my kids. Right. So it's like, you have this stimulation that like chills everybody. But then when they're out in the world, they're crazy and agitated, and they go back on the thing and they calm down. It's a great way to hook people in, right?
It sure is, yeah.
I'm anxious. I better just go on TikTok for 3 hours. And
three hours, yeah. And veg out.
Yeah.
Yeah. TV. You know, I was just playing old TV. That's how TV got over back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about kind of what we want to do here, or what our ideas, because I think this is just more of like a test run. I'll check the audio, you know, maybe use some of this, whatever. But like, I'm thinking, you know, the whole series, this next series, because I'm coming to an end of one on the podcast, which is mostly about mass shootings and the stay at home day stuff. So this next one is just games fascist play. Mm-hmm. And so you and I go back and forth, you know, both probably email and, you know, maybe writing some stuff, but then we meet on here and we just talk game analysis. So maybe starting with something brief about, you know, games, you know, drama triangle, you know, game formula, whatever we want to say, but then we jump into these games that relate more to, you know, political process, you know, war games, you know, etc. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I haven't thought a whole lot about it, but what's your take, or what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't thought about it much either. Well, to be honest with you, I'm not too much interested in talking about games.
Oh, really? You
know? Yeah. I got back into games people play and read a little bit of it, and just kind of came away from it going, it just doesn't keep my attention. It really doesn't. So I don't want to sign on to something where I'm needing to do some real research or some real reading and that kind of thing, because I'm the truth is I'm not likely to do it. Yeah. So I'm not sure how you and I can do this in such a way that, you know, I can be involved in it, and do so, authentically.
Yeah.
And with some real commitment and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could give it a shot. I'm willing to give it a shot. But the problem is that I just don't, you know, it's like, you know, how to get, you know, I understand basically fundamentally about games.
Yeah.
And how it all functions and what it has to do with personality structure and, you know, the transition from child to adult and what we carry with. I get all that.
Yeah.
And what we are what we're hanging on to in the game process, reinforcing our initial, the way in which we've been scripted initially, and how we figure out ways to hang on to that, even though it kicks us in the ass when we do it.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. So I understand that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if we decide to get into it really technically, I don't think I think I'd have a tough time with it.
Well, I don't think we even need to get into it technically, because the audience would be a layperson.
Right.
You know, so we're teaching it to people that don't know about games. And you know enough about it to speak about it, you know, like if you were talking to a client, you'd be able to explain it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the at least the idea I had with going back to games people play was, how far did you get into it before you...
I just got probably a chapter or two.
Okay. Because I forgot, you know, how dense and
it's really dense. And I started reading going,
like I think it's interesting once he gets into the actual games, but the first four chapters are like explaining all of it. And I'm thinking, this was on the bestsellers list for 2 years. Like, how did anybody get through the damn thing? But I like how clever it is. And once he gets into the games, you know, how he explains it. But my thinking was with the reread of it, I mean, other than that, it's just helpful for my therapy process, but is looking at these games and how do we, or finding games that we could telescope out and say, okay, like if it wasn't for him, you know, like Ron DeSantis, I was watching talk by Josh Hawley, who's another one of these far right, you know, he's at the Heritage Foundation giving a talk. I think he's from Kentucky or something. I don't know where he's from. But, you know, if it wasn't for woke ideology, if it wasn't for DEI and ESG and, you know, and what they're saying is like you're kind of speaking to it with these games is like they want to hold on to their reality as it is right now. Sure. They don't want that to change. Family is a man and a woman. Okay. None of this gender fiasco. Let's quit denigrating America, which is a great country. Quit making people feel guilty about racism and blah, blah, blah. And some of their points outside of that are actually fairly accurate when they go after the economic system, you know, corporatism or, you know, kind of crony capitalism. Like some of their stuff, they're on the right track, which is all the more scary for me because I think it's going to be very appealing to people. And so what I'm thinking with this podcast, and this might draw you in, maybe not, is leading up to 2024 is going to be a show. I don't care where you're from. Like, who knows what's going to happen in the next year, let alone this crazy election cycle, you know? But if we have a platform that regular people can go, oh, wait a minute, Biden's doing this, DeSantis is doing that, Trump is doing this or whatever, raising consciousness around games. Like that's kind of when I talked to the superintendent about mass shootings, it's like, listen, man, these are games people are playing. Okay. Psychological game. You can bring in all the postgraduate psychotherapists to do school linked mental health treatment for every kid in school. It ain't going to do a goddamn thing because these are people in relationships with other people. You know, it's a game process. Like I don't know anybody around here that has any clue about game analysis. And I centralized my treatment on it. It's like I really have, at least in the last probably year, because like we were talking about before, opens up the system. You have new choices. You don't have to operate as that role you were in your family system, et cetera, you know? So the idea from my end is how do we raise consciousness, not in right versus left, this is the good politician, this is the bad one. What is the game that is being played so that people can use critical thinking to actually evaluate some of these people versus just, oh, you know, that personality fits better for me, so I'm going to vote for him. Now, is any of that going to make a difference? I mean, probably not. But all of this content that I'm putting online, I'm trying to make it so that it has some value, you know, years down the road. I mean, they'll probably just cancel it or I'll get deleted or something at some point anyways. But that's the idea. And how we get there or how that goes, I'm not really sure. I mean, I emailed you a couple games I have in mind. I'm sure there's others we can play around with. Too, but thinking, you know, like the happy to help big tech does that, their little bots pop up on every website. Then now I've got you son of a, you know, with the mass shooter, you can explain that, and then you can explain, you know, the whole drone program for the United States is the exact same kind of game, you know, you analyze this person, oh, they might be with Al Qaeda, they're doing this or that, or boop, bomb, we got them. You know, and they're the kill list, and you know. Anyways, I'm preaching to the choir here, but that's kind of that's my vision with it.
Okay.
Less of a technical, you know, getting into it, more of like, you know, stuff that would hit people on a gut level. Oh yeah, that's kind of what's going on. Intuitive.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how I could be a part of that and be helpful. I'm not paying attention to what's going on politically. And that kind of thing. I mean, I, you know, not nearly as deeply as you are. I've kind of moved past that. Not that it's not a great place to be, in a place that we need to be.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that it's, I don't have the energy for it anymore. I don't have the, I mean, it's like I get sick of it. You know, it's like.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, I just really, it's like, you know, here we go again. Kind of, this has that flavor to it. So I'm not sure I can help with that. I mean, it means that it sounds like I'm going to have to dive into these areas that I don't really want to be involved in, that I don't really want to have to pay attention to at this stage of my life. You know, it's like, you know, just having a conversation with you about all of these kinds of things just off the top is always great.
That's all I'm thinking we do.
Yeah, because
if we do the next one, like let's say we meet next Thursday or whatever.
Right.
Click on Zoom, but it's just like our phone calls. You talk about the meat, meat sale, or I call, I talk about the FBI or whatever it is. And then we talk. The thing we would probably eliminate, comparatively to this contact, is like, I'm not going to talk about my personal life and Lindsay or whatever. It's we'll just focus it on games, we can talk at least in a topical way about fascism. I mean, that would be the idea too. I mean, there's and the little fascist, like when I briefly brought that up, people were like, oh yeah, that does feel right. That it's not like, it's obviously it's external when Mussolini and Hitler are doing what they're doing, that's really happening, but that it's inside all of us. And that's why, these forces that are really full steam ahead, mostly in the Republican Party, but a lot of the stuff the corporate Democrats are doing too, looks fairly fascistic. And so if we can put that into something, this dialogue where it's digestible. See, the other thing with the podcast, I mean, I think you're understandably kind of concerned with your process, what you would bring to it, but I haven't done any dialogues on the podcast. It's just been me talking. I can do the heavy lifting on contemporary politics or whatever, my perception of it, and we just go back and forth on the the details of the games, and how it fits in with the games. What are you smiling about?
Well, no, I like that phrase. You could do the heavy lifting. You
see, I read The Courage to Be Free. Just about vomiting through much of DeSantis's narrative. Oh my God!
Yes,
read the whole book.
I can't do it, man.
You know, he was at Gitmo. He was at Gitmo, watching them force feed through the nose, dumping Ensure boxes so that they felt like they were drowning from so much, they just keep dumping them in, and he's in the background laughing at these guys. That's who we're dealing with. He's a complete sociopath.
See, that's what I mean. I'm glad
he didn't write about that in the book, obviously.
I'm really glad that you're able to do this.
Just
some years ago I would have been able to do it too. Okay. And did do that kind of process.
Well, it's selfish, I got family members that gravitate towards his message.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's.
And I think there's a wider. He's got a real. He's got a. I mean, he won by 1.5 million votes.
Right.
For governor, no Republican governor has ever won.
Right.
By that, so he got Democrats. He got minority populations. More women than the other side. I mean, so. It's crazy. And he's a tough guy. He's running as leader and authority and executive power. It's that Führer kind of mentality. And he gets it done. He's gotten the stuff done.
He's got it done,
And he runs it as a business. And so he's saying, let's take Florida Incorporated and make it America Incorporated. I mean, it's just neoliberalism. I mean, that's all he's really going to do. That's what all of them do. But he'll go to war with China. He'll pull the trigger. No, he's a Marine guy, so he's fine with that. So that's the message I want to get out, is that this guy, I would take Trump over DeSantis all day.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
DeSantis is an imperialist. Trump's a capitalist. Not that they're mutually exclusive, but Trump just wants a little return on everything he does.
He's just a gangster type. That's his world, from my point of view. Yeah.
DeSantis is like the political pedigree. He's been aiming for the.
Well, some reason mainstream media. I do watch PBS, every evening, Monday through Friday, for, oh, I don't know, 15 to 20 minutes, just gets a taste of what's going on.
Yeah.
And the flavor is, for some reason, they think DeSantis is, it's not really much of a threat to Trump in terms of getting a nomination to run for the Republican Party. Not yet, anyway. So, so it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure why not. The guy seems like he's, like you described, he's got a great heavy duty following, at least in Florida, maybe nationwide. And he's an incredible con artist. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm willing to give it a shot. I really do have my trepidation about some of it, though. So one of the things I would request is that if we're going to get into the, you know, games people play, or the fascists play, and we're talking about both sides of the equation, all sides of the equation,
yeah,
in other words, Republican, Democrat, and so on, let's make sure that we balance it out,
yeah,
in terms of presentation. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want it to look like we're on one side of the, you know, oh, it's Republicans that are political.
Right. No. Yeah.
Or it's Democrat, you know, or it's.
Well, that's social. Where let's start next week with the drama triangle, or maybe we talk about fascism a little bit. But the drama triangle, how I like to explain it, and I do this in session, which is maybe a little risky. Mm-hmm. When I talk about the persecutor, I talk about Trump. Okay. When I talk about the rescuer, I talk about Biden. Well, you've seen some of my writing around this, too. So I agree totally. We have to look at the big picture here, not just one side or the other. And it's worth repeating, you know, whatever we talk about, whatever we do, none of it goes online until we both green light it, even excluding the editing and everything, like, which my guy will do all that stuff. So whatever happens, and I plan on, the idea is that we'll just, however many episodes we want to do, we end up doing, I'm not going to publish anything until it's all done. It's all looked at. So it's not like, okay, no, let's put this up. It's like, I'm taking a break from the social movement, from the podcasting. I need to get back into reading. I need to just focus on therapy. We got to make money. We got loans to pay and houses to potentially build. Mm-hmm. So I'm really scaling things down. It was a lot of stress in, well, this whole month, but March. And now I don't have any speaking things coming up. So I just want to chill. I want to dig in to some stuff like this. Mm-hmm. You know, we've both read stuff on fascism, but package it together in a way that, I mean, literally, you know, selfishly, if I can get some of my brother-in-laws to listen to this, that's a win. They can decide, you know, but if they can, they can listen to it and understand, and we can have a dialogue about the triangulation that's happening, you know, for like one thing, like woke ideology. Nobody's explaining really what they mean by that. They're just tapping into some white anger around change. That's all that they're really pointing to. And some of it, it's not just white people. Some of it, people disagree for different reasons. Should it be taught in schools or not? Or should parents, you know, so it's like, it's complex, of course. But if I can, because that's what the stay-at-home day, I don't think I told you this, that facilitated political dialogues with my in-laws that I've never had before.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. So that's the long game for me. The guy Tyler, who was on the school board meetings, he's as far f-ing right as you're gonna get. So I'm meeting with him. I'm meeting with Muhammad, who has an office over here.
Oh yeah, see, I wanted to hear more about that too.
I went to a service or the mosque, and I started reading the Quran.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. It's very. I haven't even gotten past.
I read a bunch of it a long time ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you get through the whole thing?
Oh, I don't remember. I guess piecemealed it, right? You go in. It's, for me, it's like reading the Tao Te Ching, you know, or reading Chuang Tzu or somebody like that. You don't read the whole thing. You
Okay.
just go in and pick out pieces, and you know, you read it and go, oh wow, you know, I Ching's the same way. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's for me, it's just a coalition building, and I know these things are slow. So if I can get right wingers, and that's not how I would really describe them, but you don't know. So if I can get the free market, social Darwinian side, probably some Christianity evangelical, and then some of the Islamic community. Because Muhammad, he already said if I wanted to talk at one of these services that I could go in and talk like about mental health or something like that. Oh, I was really? Like, damn. Okay. I mean, I hadn't barely even attended anything, and he was very open. Have you ever been to one?
No. Mm-mm.
Very welcoming, very come as you go. People coming in all the way till the end of the service. People just popping in. Right. They do the little prayers, their little bows.
Right.
The guy's talking. It was actually a university professor. That came in and was talking. And so I said to him after, I was like, is this typical that I went to Catholic mass, if you're late, it's like you're going to hell. So it's like very, low context versus high context situation. And he was like, oh no, that's where, you go anywhere in the world. That's how it is. You just kind of come in. So it's this very interesting, I'm my toes are in the water, but it's like, feels like a bit like Buddhism, very individualistic with the collective, orientation.
Collective and, orientation to it.
They're all just prophets. So Muhammad is the last one, but Jesus and Moses. So it was very friendly. Everybody's like, hey, how's it going? Hugging and like laid back. It's coming to the end of Ramadan, or maybe it was last week, I think. So very interesting because
I take that back. We did go to we went to one with Shani a long time ago, between here and Milwaukee. I can't remember the name of it, but she wanted to go.
Yeah.
It was like that too. It was very nice, very kind, and people were very generous. And
And we walked because it was so close to our office building, and He I didn't realize how many African owned grocery stores there are right by I knew of a couple. So he walks me into all these stores. Hey, this is Andrew and blah, blah, just introduced me. Everybody was so smiley, so friendly, happy. And so then we made our way to one of the mosques. There's like three, I think he said, around here. And, what was interesting, I don't know if I maybe should have expected this or what, but I'm sitting there and, everyone is a black body that comes in.
Right.
And I'm like feeling fear every time. Mm. And in my head, it's like terrorist, everyone that comes in the whole time. I mean, I knew that wasn't real. That wasn't actually happening, but it was quite an experience. And just in that sense, let alone all the other stuff, but it was like, yeah, that's in my system from, the Gulf War in 91 all the way, look at these crazy guys, jihadists, blah, blah, blah. And it was nothing like that. I mean, and they couldn't have all been putting on a show for me. There's probably 50 people there or something like that. But every time I come in, it was like a threat to me.
I can relate to that. Relate to that. Sure. Yeah.
And so I told them about it. I talked about it. So it was a great cross-cultural experience. Yeah. We walked back and I said, this is my conditioning. And we see how it started was I wanted him to come to the school board meeting.
Right. Okay.
So he invited me to dinner because I was like, let's get coffee or a drink. And he doesn't drink, of course, because he's Muslim. But it was Ramadan, so he can't eat until the sun goes down. So he invites me to, he owns a grocery store that's attached to a restaurant. So we had a Somali restaurant.
Right.
Oh my God, the food was incredible. So we had this big long meal, and I told him about the stay at home day. And so then he invited me to the mosque and asked if I wanted a copy of the Quran. And he's just a cool guy. He's an immigrant from Somalia, and it's a great connection. I'm just, I don't know. I think I told you in the fall, it must have been Allah talking to me, but I was like, I asked you about Islam, and I was like thinking, like, I need to learn about Islam. It just came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Like, that's weird. Like, what? Yeah. I don't know what that is. And here we are.
Yeah.
6 months later. And of course, I'm not going to believe a goddamn word of any of it. But I
want. Well, no, of course not.
But
but you get to pick up the ambiance, the energy, you get to experience the culture itself,
and you get community. I mean,
and you get community.
For me, the fascists are coming. Yeah. I mean, they're always coming. But so I need as many people to have my back around here as you can get.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Well, I'm starting to realize how deeper you are into this than I thought. You know, I mean, it's like, this is serious business for you, obviously.
Well, I had to abandon Buddhism to come back to Zen, I think, is what happened.
Yeah.
Because I was using Buddhism to deal with fear, which wasn't a bad thing.
Right.
But as soon as I pulled back a little bit, I could see it clearly. And then, like I told you, I realized I was fear. I mean, I think that, you know, all these models for personality and Freudian psychoanalysis, and I think at the core it's fear. You know,
I do too.
It's fear.
Yeah. And we should have that discussion as a part of what we do with our podcast.
Yeah,
as we go, it'll come up spontaneously, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, that's true. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
You know, because Loy uses lack, which is in a different neighborhood, but I think it's fear.
It's fear. Yeah. Sure. I've read all kinds of stuff, man. And, you know, most of the themes, when you get right down to it, is fear. It is fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can extrapolate sometimes, and sometimes it's actually said outright. You know, Huang Po, for example, you know, talks about, he doesn't say it a lot, but every now and then he'll say, this is about getting rid of your anxiety.
Mm.
Yeah, goodbye. That's all it's about. That's all it's about. Right. And so, you know, get to the cliff, jump off.
Yeah.
Scared shitless to jump off this cliff.
Yeah, I love that book by Littlefield.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, damn, okay. I mean, a lot of it's crazy as all get out too, but, but you know, the basic, there is, you know, the basic themes are really very potent. Anyway. Well, and
you know, that instant Zen one that I'm reading is by Ferran, I think.
Yeah, I read that about it. I don't know how many times. I forgot it. I got it on the shelf here. I went back through it again.
Well, and basically he's saying, what's your problem, man? Just quit thinking about stuff.
Yeah, that's basically
what he's saying. You know, and I don't have hold of anything that he said, like zero. You know, it's like I'm reading this thing and like, why am I even reading it? There's nothing there, right? But that's the point. Yeah,
that's the point.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing
to hold on to, so quit trying to hold on to stuff.
Right. Well, it's, you know, it's a contradiction in a sense. Long Po talks like a madman the whole time. And then, but he's telling you, stop thinking about shit.
Yeah.
You know, stop. Concepts aren't real. And so just dump the shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, he's telling you over and over and over these Dharma talks. You know, this and that, and then what the Dharma, the Buddha, and blah, 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 is going, okay, but don't pay any attention to what I'm saying in essence.
Yeah.
Drop this shit. And then what will happen is, even Batchelor talks about that too in his way. You know, so anyway, you know, it's like, but I hear what you're saying about having to drop Buddhism and move to Zen. That's basically what I've been doing as well.
Yeah.
Going back to Zen. / Taoism,
right?
And because it's biological, it's physiological fundamentally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, there's some themes there that I think are important themes that Zen and Taoism hold in common. I think you got that book that
Great,
I referred to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for me, it's like it's simple, it's straightforward. You know, breathe and be in this world. Meet the world as it is.
That's where you know Phillips kind of gets it wrong. Of course, he's caught up in dualistic thinking: open system, closed system. Greg says Taoism is a systemless system.
Right.
So you're not even attached to the idea of a system.
Right.
That's different than an open system, closed system. Yeah.
Well, there is a relative absolute positions to take again.
Yeah.
And so with the relativistic position, relative position, then all of that stuff is real. Yeah. With the absolute position, none of it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So as long as you know that, right, and we're, so that's a still point issue again. Mm-hmm. As long as you know that, and you are not attached to either one, actually, you don't have an attachment to one side of that or the other. You just watch it flow.
Well, you know, maybe that's the bridge right there. Is right. You have to, well, have to. Game analysis becomes much easier if you mm-hmm. detach from ego.
Yes.
If you're empty, mm-hmm. emptiness, because then you can actually see what's the dyad or the, depending on how many actors, but or whatever, is right. You got to be able to track what's being said, but then say, well, wait a minute, where's the con, or you know, how am I, what's my gimmick that I'm getting pulled into,
mm-hmm.
you know, is to clear, because so many of my clients, you know, we get to basically the transactional analysis, and they want to play psychiatry. They want to talk about what's going on in their head. I'm saying, no, what happens when you talk to Don? What do you say? What does he say? Well, I don't remember. We talked about it. It's like, well, you can't pay attention. That's why I teach him meditation and, mm-hmm. you know, adult state access. But to really empty out, you're basically depersonalizing the mm-hmm. experience. And you say, oh, you know, they're happy to help me, right? It's like, but yeah, there's a con. So maybe that's where we,
well, that
Zen in games fascist play. You know, there's a good book called Game Zen Masters Play that I have on a list that I just never got to.
Well, really?
Maybe that's what we read.
Let me write that one down. You know the author of it? Well, I can probably find it. Games Zen.
I can send you a link to it. I can Google it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that'd be great.
I don't know if it has anything to do with what we're talking about.
Well, we can review it and see what it's like, but it sounds like it
it's
might
be. It's an older book. I know that.
Yeah.
Robert Soul, Audrey Carr.
Hmm.
I'll throw it in this chat. I could email it to you too, but you should be able to click on it.
Hmm.
169 pages. Do you think you can handle that?
I
1976. What were you doing in 1976? I wasn't even born.
1976. What was I doing? I was working as a probation officer. Actually doing transactional analysis.
Game analysis.
Yeah, working with females in a halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
There you are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that book appealed to me when I saw it anyway. So it'll probably be fun just to read, even if it's got nothing to do. But I think, you know, what we came to here as the antidote to games fascist play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I usually start at the beginning and get to the end right away. Mm-hmm. Then.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, there he is. Yeah. Let me pull it up. Oh, I didn't mean to lose you.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
You just switched screens.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wait a minute. No. This guy is deep, man.
You know him?
Yeah. Damn. Okay.
Robert Soul.
No, Robert. Yeah, Robert H. Blythe. Are we looking at the same one?
No, we must be. Hey, yeah, this guy.
Games Zen Masters Play, writings of R.H. Blythe.
Oh, that's what it says?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see it now. Okay, I'm looking at the, so it's edited.
Yeah.
Edited, yeah, because Blythe has written other books, right?
Yeah, see, this dude is deep, man.
But so, there's another one by the same authors called The Gospel According to Zen. Beyond the Death of God. Well, that might be too much Jesus.
Well, that might be a little too Jesus.
From D.T. Suzuki.
Well, I'm gonna send off of this one, man.
Yeah, let's get it.
Yeah, I'm gonna send off of this bad boy. All right, so I think we've drawn the conclusion that we'll try this stuff on. We'll do it.
Yeah, just have fun with it, man.
Just have fun, and I'm not gonna. Just so you know, I'm just, you know, I'm not. You know, I'll do the best I can to, you know, look at what's going on worldwide, and but it's gonna probably end up to be as much, you know, me and you just going after it and talking about whatever comes up. I mean, I have enough information in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Historically and even currently.
We'll just play off of one another's.
Yeah. And I'll go and look at the game process again. I don't want to read the whole book, but I can look at game descriptions.
Well, let's focus on, whatever we want to say about games. And on the podcast, I'll have a lecture on there already about games.
Okay.
So people listen to that, but let's just focus on the drama triangle next time we meet.
Okay.
And then maybe from there we could like pick a game or two that we want to talk about. We can always reorder this stuff too. It doesn't have to be sequential. So we'll just play it by ear. But I think we can, at the end of the day, if we both just showed up and we had nothing, it'll still be interesting.
Yeah, it always is.
So much. But yeah, I think if we tie it to fascism, that'll be a unique offering. And then maybe we get into Zen. Because it seems like on all these podcasts I do, eventually towards the end, something with Zen comes out of it.
Comes out of it, yeah.
Like the four statements of Zen. So that's this episode of Games Fascist Play. Just getting an introduction to it. We'll go into more of the games, some of the ones that Byrne wrote about, some that I'm thinking about on my own. So I hope you enjoy it. Thanks so much for listening.